People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. My guest is a much-respected local violinist called Jeffrey Armstrong, who is back in the country from Germany for a series of recitals with his trio from the 22nd of August to the 30th of August. And I'm going to give you details of those concerts a little later. But just let me tell you that Jeffrey Armstrong enjoys a distinguished international career as a chamber musician, orchestral performer, and soloist. Based in Bremen in Germany, he's a member of the Deutsche Kammerphilharmonie and regularly performs in some of Europe's leading concert halls. He's also a member of the acclaimed Nerida Quartet and has appeared extensively throughout South Africa, Germany, and the United Kingdom, including performances here with the Cape Town Philharmonic and the Göttinger Symphony Orchestra. He's currently pursuing a soloist diploma at the Hochschule für Musik in Hanover. So, Jeffrey, a warm welcome back to your home country.
Hi, Rodney. Thanks for having me.
How long have you been away? How long have you been in Germany?
You know, I've been in Germany for around 5 years now, I think. And before that, I spent 4 years in England. So I left when I was 18, and now it's almost been just over 10 years only since I've been away.
But you do come back fairly regularly, don't you?
Yes. No, it's important to me to come back normally about twice a year, sometimes once a year.
Mm-hmm. Because it sounds as though you're very busy over there with all this business of being an orchestral performer, a soloist, a chamber musician, and all that must keep you fairly busy.
Yes. No, there's quite a lot to do, and I'm quite happy to have a lot to do. Between orchestra in Bremen, which I've recently become a member of, the Deutsche Kammerphilharmonie, and my quartet, the Nerida Quartet, I have plenty to do and keep myself busy over there. Yeah.
When you say your quartet, is it a quartet that you formed?
No. So I was lucky enough to join this quartet about 2 years ago when they were looking for a violinist, and the quartet itself has existed for around 8 years.
Okay.
And so it just so happened that that a bunch of us from the orchestra were looking to play quartet together, and the Nerida Quartet was looking for a new violinist, and it all sort of worked out that we all live and work in the orchestra and play in Bremen together. It's all just really it's a dream come true.
Oh, really? Okay. I always hear that orchestral musicians love to play chamber music.
Yes.
Just to give them a chance to shine a bit more.
Yeah.
Now, Jeffrey, you're here for the series of concerts I mentioned with a trio. So tell me what this is all about.
So the trio is with Nicola McLaughlin, cellist, and Henley Jun, pianist. And we know each other we've known each other since the beginning of high school, basically. Henley and I went to school together, and Nicola I know very well from Frankfurt Chamber Music Festival many years ago. And we decided that we'd all come back from our studies and work in Germany and put on a few piano trio concerts because, well, it's just really fun, isn't it?
Well, yes.
And we've got a really nice program, something a bit different. We've got two sonatas. I'll be playing the Schubert A major violin sonata with Henley, which is a really beautiful piece. And Nicola will be playing the Debussy cello sonata. Add some nice contrast. And then at the end, we'll come together to play Mendelssohn's D minor trio, which we've all been looking forward to now for the past year, actually.
That really is a lovely program, yeah. Actually, and lovely contrast as well.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
A Debussy right in the middle. And are these people also studying in Germany? They're out of the country most of the time.
Yes. So Henley lives in Mannheim in Germany, and Nicola is based in Frankfurt at the moment. And
okay.
We've all, you know, we all miss home a lot. We've been away from home for quite a while, and so yeah, it's a brilliant chance for us to all come home and just have a little holiday after we've done a bit of work.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And also to get out of the heat wave in the
yes.
UK and Europe, I have to say. And we're having an odd winter here anyway, but nonetheless, and when you do decide to come out like this, the rehearsal process, do you wait till you get here, or do you work at it for a while beforehand? If she's in Frankfurt and he's in the other place.
Yes, unfortunately, we're all a little bit busy. scheduling-wise to organize things whilst we're in Germany. But Henley just arrived this morning. And right after this interview, we're going to go and head off and start our rehearsal process to make sure everything lines up by the time of the first
concert. But you've done the works before, presumably.
Yes, we've all played them in different constellations before.
And I just want to say, I'll mention this again at the end, Geoffrey, the concerts, there are five of them. Mm. A sort of mini tour. Saturday the 22nd of August at 6 p.m. at the Moyo restaurant in Kirstenbosch. Then the next day, Sunday the 23rd at 3 p.m. at Old Nectar. Tuesday the 25th at 6 p.m. the Montague Music Society. That'll get you out into the country a bit. And then on Wednesday the 26th, 7 p.m. the Valchemiant Concert Series. And on Sunday the 30th, the last one, 4 p.m. the Goodnow Hall in Wellington. And all this can be booked, presumably at Web Tickets or Quicket, and you can go and see this trio perform, a trio of South African musicians doing so well internationally. And I dare say, I'm going to ask this question anyway, because I don't know how you'll answer it. Do you prefer chamber music to orchestral music, playing-wise? I suppose it's very different, so it's an unfair question.
No, it's different, but you know, it's interesting, because the Deutsche Kammerphilharmonie, the orchestra which I play with, is very different in the way that it's a very small orchestra. We're a very small string section, about six violins, and you really get the feeling that you're playing chamber music no matter what the context. And I think for me that's very important. So chamber music on its own as a piano trio, or whether playing in an orchestra like the Kammerphilharmonie, it's an important part, I think, of how.
And you work with some good conductors, like I know Paavo Järvi has been there or is there and has made some wonderful recordings. And later on, in fact, we're going to listen to one of his Beethoven recordings.
Yes. It's been really fascinating to get to know Paavo and to work with him. He's had such a history with the orchestra. He conducted the sort of pioneering Beethoven cycle. I don't know how long it is going on, but towards the beginning of their rise to fame, as it were. Mm-hmm. And he has such a lovely relationship with the orchestra. He gives them such freedom, but at the same time is so clear with what he wants and so transparent and true to the score that it's been really enlightening to work with him.
And it's one of those things where it looks or sounds certainly as though he's using the period instrument style and technique, but without using period instruments.
Exactly. So we all play on modern instruments and with modern setups. Apart from the basses, the basses actually play on gut strings and use an old tuning system. But violinists play on the current setup, and the Kammerphilharmonie aims for a sound that is fresh and historically informed, while taking advantage of the sort of modern things that we have at our disposal.
Do you use vibrato, for example, on the strings?
Yes, minimal amounts of vibrato. Yes.
Okay.
So it's not too much, but just enough so that it sings. And it's actually fascinating. We've just recorded the Schubert symphonies now with Paavo, and the changes in style that you have to accommodate and that you adapt to are quite extreme, even between Mozart and Schubert. These small differences become very big.
Well, I've just made an executive decision here. Since we're talking about that orchestra, and I said we'd hear some Beethoven later, why don't we start with an excerpt from the recording of the Beethoven symphonies? Would that be okay with you, Geoffrey?
Absolutely.
Because then we'll listen to part of the first movement of Beethoven's second symphony with the orchestra, the Kammerphilharmonie in Bremen, the Deutsche Kammerphilharmonie, with Paavo Järvi. And there you heard part of Beethoven's Second Symphony, the first movement there, played by the Deutsche Kammerphilharmonie in Bremen, conducted by Paavo Järvi, the orchestra in which my guest, Jeffrey Armstrong, is a violinist within the orchestra. And Jeffrey, that, as we said just before, that cycle of the Beethoven symphonies was extremely well received. I've only got a few copies, like an excellent ninth, by the way. And I'm glad you told me about the Schubert, because that's going to be something to look out for.
Yes.
Especially with someone like Paavo Järvi.
Yes.
But he does things across the repertoire, doesn't he? He doesn't only do Beethoven, Schubert, Mozart.
No. So Paavo has got a very wide-ranging repertoire and works with a number of orchestras as well.
Mm.
I must say, Bremen is more focused to the classicals. We've recently recorded 2 Haydn symphonies, and that's part of a set of Haydn symphonies that'll be released over the next couple of years. The Schubert cycle is also nearing completion, and obviously the Beethoven cycle happened a while ago. So Paavo's relationship with the orchestra was very much one where the orchestra, and he as well, I think, learned a lot about these classical works, and it's this style that I found so addictive when I first played with the orchestra many years ago. This sort of approach to music that is normally treated otherwise as, I don't know, treated a little more carefully. Find this very refreshing.
How did you get into the orchestra, may I ask?
that's also quite an interesting story. I was booked as an ad hoc on a very very beautiful tour through Scandinavia. And we played, in fact, we played Beethoven's Second Symphony, and we played all 5 piano concertos with Elizabeth Leonskaya, the pianist. And this was my first experience. It just so happened that at that time, one of the academists in the orchestra, a violinist, had left the orchestra, and they were looking to fill that place. And I was lucky enough to be asked to join the academy at that point. And I said, yes, naturally, of course, which displeased the orchestra that I was currently under contract with in Hanover. But nevertheless, I'm very glad I made that decision. And a few years later, I ended up with a job there.
Oh, good for you. So you were, in fact, playing the orchestra in Hanover for a while.
I was on a part-time contract with the radio orchestra in Hanover at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite clear to me, though, that the nature of the job in Bremen just appealed so much more to me in a way.
Especially, as you say, stylistically, working with someone like Paavo Järvi.
Stylistically, and also one tends to think of an orchestra job as, in Germany anyway, as something that is pretty restricted in terms of working hours. You know, you have your job to go to every week, you have a certain number of hours. Whereas in Bremen, we're actually technically all freelancers. And that means that we have complete freedom to choose which projects we'd like to do, to choose which projects we wouldn't like to take time off. For example, I'm here right now, even though the orchestra is busy working. And this kind of lifestyle just really appealed to me. This makes me very happy to be able to have this flexibility.
I want to ask you all about your background in a moment, how you got onto the violin and all that. But why did you go to Germany? Why did you choose Germany?
I went to Germany because of the teacher. I went to Elisabeth Kuferat, who I was recommended by one of my professors in England. And so that's what initially drew me to Germany. And what kept me there was just the classical culture and the scale at which classical music sort of happens.
And is appreciated.
Is appreciated, yes.
And it's a wonderful, it's my favorite European city, by the way, and I'm very annoyed I can't speak the language. And I know you can. But it's with this lady, isn't it, that you're doing a soloist diploma?
Yes, that's right.
What does that actually mean, a soloist diploma?
A soloist diploma is a degree at the university that is there to basically train and give opportunities to young soloists. And so I've had a recent opportunity to play with the Göttinger Symphony Orchestra, a Brahms concerto, and that was part of the soloist diploma. And you receive lessons and you get given opportunities to broaden your solo career, essentially.
So you said you've been away for more or less 10 years now.
Yes.
What made you go to England? What made you leave? I mean, obviously, I'm sure it was your career decision.
Yes, I mean, it's a decision that at the time seemed simple because I was 18, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But in hindsight, it's a very big decision to make. And I think the thing that took me overseas was that I was incredibly ambitious at that age. And I was offered a very generous full scholarship by the Royal Birmingham Conservatoire. It seemed too much of an opportunity to pass up, and I just really wanted to see what would be possible mm-hmm. with this classical music career. Oh, because when I was still in school, it was, you know, 11 years ago, not a clear career path. You know, that my parents, whilst they were very supportive, made sure that I was still doing okay in my science and maths. You know, it wasn't something that was a given that you would just be able to have a career as a musician.
Yeah.
And so going overseas was definitely sort of confirmation that this would be a step in the right direction.
Okay. Well, just after this next music break, I'm going to ask you how it all began, Jeffrey. But now you've chosen some Baroque music, a concerto grosso by Corelli. Tell me why this is on your list.
Yeah, this actually takes me back to around the time when I was 17, 16, 17, 18, deciding to go overseas. We played this many times in youth orchestra and in string ensemble at my music school, Hugo Lambrechts. And I've played it several times since, also in my professional career. And it's a piece that always takes me back to those times. It's just a wonderful piece. It's sort of the bread and butter of why we make music. It's just beautifully written music with Italian flair. And it's this particular recording I really love because of how light and fresh it is. Thank you.
music by Corelli, the Concerto Grosso in G minor, Opus 6, number 8, and that was the fifth movement, an Allegro Pastoral, played by the Capella Gabetta, with Andreas Gabetta leading them. And it was another choice of my guest on People of Note here on Fine Music Radio this week, the violinist Jeffrey Armstrong, visiting home for a series of concerts, which I'll tell you about again towards the end, but living and working and studying in Germany. So, as I said, Jeffrey, I want to find out how it all started. How did you decide, A, to play the violin, or to become a musician, or what happened?
I'm not really sure how it began. I'm not completely sure how I was drawn to the violin initially, but I'm told that I would run around the house with a tennis racket, pretending to play the violin.
Oh,
and so this was the first sort of sign that something might happen. My parents then took me to a music center to rent a violin, and it all sort of started off from there, yeah.
Were your parents at all musical? Was there any music in the home?
My mother plays flute and piano and actually studied music at UCT. To this day, I'm not really sure why she doesn't play anymore, but apparently I arrived at a rather inconvenient time. So, but yes, so my mother's side of the family, there's a lot of music in okay. that.
And I think you said earlier they support you for what you're doing. They
yes.
completely support you.
Very grateful that they helped me through high school. Sort of, you know, really supported me in my decision to take it.
And when did it become apparent that you were going to make this a career and not maths and science?
I must say, already at the age of 13 or 14, I sort of knew that this was what I wanted to be doing. Of course, I kept applying myself at school, as one does, just to make sure that, you know, if anything were to go wrong. But I was pretty adamant that this is what I wanted to do from that age on. And so I applied myself and also had a great teacher, Jack Tivet, who made sure that I applied myself.
Yes. Famous teacher, Jack yeah. Tivet, famous string teacher.
Yeah. And it was a very intense time in high school when I was getting ready to go overseas and finishing up things here. I did the Artscape competition back then, it was called. But yeah, I'm glad that things were the way they were.
Mm-hmm. And did you study in South Africa? Or did you go straight overseas on a bursary to England? You did not work at any of your universities here.
I left at the age of 18 straight to England. That was the plan,
mm-hmm.
and that's what happened. Thanks to the scholarship, and yeah, I think at 18, being immersed in such a different world really forces one to sort of grow up pretty quickly.
Yes, I'm sure it does.
But again, I'm really glad that I had that experience, because it makes me enjoy coming home all that much more, and it's really taught me a lot about myself.
Yeah, that's a good time to learn about yourself, 18, 19, 20, up to 25 or thereabouts.
Yeah, no, it was certainly a big leap, and I'm still in touch with, obviously, all of these friends who were put in the same position, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of South Africans obviously leave at 18. Unfortunately, that's another topic. I do think that it would be great if people didn't feel the need to leave. But yes,
But it's something that has to be done as a young man. And also, as you said, to Germany, which is such a cultural anyway, but such a musical epicenter, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
And so the thought of going to Germany didn't in any way terrify you?
No, I think it
excite you?
It was this sort of natural progression from England.
Okay.
Unfortunately, also, it was around the time of Brexit, dare I mention the word.
The word.
And... But Germany has really established itself as a hub of classical music in Europe in the most recent years.
Did you have to learn? Well, you had to learn to speak the language, didn't you?
Yes, that was a little difficult in the beginning, but thanks to my second language, Afrikaans, it was made a lot easier.
Oh, yes, because of grammar and things like that.
Yes.
As I said at the beginning, one of the things I regret is not being able to speak German, because it's very difficult to learn from scratch when you're as old as I am. And because I love Germany, I have very good friends in Berlin and go see the orchestra there, been to Bayreuth. It's a big sort of center for me as well. So it must be, as a young man, very exciting to work there. And Bremen as a city?
Bremen, I really love. You know, it's not the biggest city in Germany, and it's certainly not the most central, but it's really beautiful. And I live in right in the center in the older district, and it's the kind of city where, you know, you live 10 minutes away from all of your colleagues and all of your friends, and you mm-hmm. go to the shops and you walk past someone. And I think this kind of lifestyle is something I also really enjoy.
And the concert hall, Jeffrey?
The concert hall in Bremen is fantastic. It's the Glocke. It's being refurbished. It's about to be refurbished, so we'll have to find a temporary solution to play in. But the concert hall in Bremen is also fantastic, yes.
Okay. Now we're going to go to some chamber music by Schubert, and you've chosen the string quartet number 13, the one in A minor, the first movement therefrom. How did this make it onto your list, your short list?
Yes, I must just add at this point that asking a musician to choose five of their favorite pieces is really, really tough. But this piece made it on because I particularly love this recording. The Schubert Quartet is one of the first, this Rosamunde Quartet is one of the first pieces that I played with the Neruda Quartet when I joined them. And so I spent, of course, hours and hours preparing it with the score and practicing it and making sure that I was on top of things. And it's just one of the most stunning pieces of music, unassuming but really powerful. And this particular recording by the Chiaroscuro Quartet is very touching. They play it on gut strings, which is a little unusual for the contemporary performance practice. But it has a wonderful range of colors and is most sensitively done. It's beautiful.
Schubert's String Quartet No. 13, the one known as the Rosamunda Quartet, the first movement there with the Chiaroscuro Quartet. And it was another choice of my guest here on People of Note on Fine Music Radio, the violinist Jeffrey Armstrong, visiting his home from his life in Bremen in Germany at the moment and doing a series of concerts for us between the 22nd and 30th of August. I'll give you details of those concerts in a while. Just before, Jeffrey, we played that piece, you were talking about gut strings as opposed to steel strings. And gut strings you do associate, don't you, with the period instrument performance. Do you ever use gut strings? Have you ever played on gut strings?
I have once or twice played on gut strings. It's something that's highly specialized and takes a whole lot of practice and getting used to. So I don't play on gut strings. Mm-hmm. I would never say that. You know, no disrespect to the no disrespect to the fine musicians who spend their lives working to play on gut strings. But I find it a fascinating color and a really interesting approach that really informs how we make decisions about music, especially Haydn and Mozart.
Mm, yes.
That would have been played on gut.
And also with gut strings, the bowing is different, isn't it? The bow is not so heavy, or there's something to do with bowing with gut strings, which is apparently very different.
Yes, often one would use a different bow. So the bow that we know today as the violin bow is actually a standardized bow that was invented by François Tourte around 180, I think, years ago or something like that. But bows before then were a lot more varied and they came in different shapes and forms depending on where you were, which country, time period. And so the bow does make a big difference, mm-hmm. Yes.
And you often hear sometimes when I've sat in rehearsals or watched videos of rehearsals, the conductors telling the players to use all of their bow, which is interesting because if you just use the middle bit, you're not getting the full strength of the sound for a certain phrase. Am I putting that in a mixed up way?
Yeah, sure. No, using more bow is always a good solution. Well, no, sometimes a good solution.
A good solution sounds suspicious.
Yeah, no, the amount of bow makes a big difference. And especially if we've all got to try and use the same amount of bow at the same time.
That's the other trick, isn't it?
Yes.
You said right at the beginning you rented a violin from somewhere. But so what are you playing now? What have you got now?
I have a really beautiful violin made by a luthier named Peter Greiner, who the violin was made in 1997. It's a modern instrument, a copy of a Guarneri. But this violin has a kind of beautiful history. It belonged to my teacher, and my teacher is in a quartet with Christian Tetzlaff. And so before that, it belonged to Christian Tetzlaff as well.
Oh, right. Wow.
And so this violin has sort of been passed around a bit, and I'm able to play on it now, and it's just really a pleasure. It's something that every day you sort of take out of the case and wonder what it's going to give you, you know, sometimes yeah. positive and sometimes negative, but
depending
always
on its mood.
Yeah.
And not your mood, its mood.
Yes.
I dare say.
Yes.
How do you get a violin like that? Are you offered one on a loan basis or do you buy it?
So yes, modern instruments, it's still possible, I would say, to buy for many musicians. Most of the instruments that are really up there and in the hundreds of thousands of euros are not really possible to finance oneself. And so very often it's through foundations or through sort of private individuals.
Like trust funds and that sort of thing.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Very often these days, musicians are not able to purchase the instruments that they play on.
Mm-hmm. Because we had a violinist here the other day who was playing for the orchestra, and he had some extraordinarily expensive and valuable Stradivarius, which he didn't come out with because he was worried about traveling and all that, and leaves it in a vault in Germany somewhere when he does go about. And the figures he used, the millions and millions of euros, was phenomenal.
Yeah. Unfortunately, one becomes immune to these amounts of money as a musician and makes peace with it.
Yes.
But yes, it's not always possible.
And the other thing that fascinates me, Jeffrey, with violins, like you said, you take it out of the box sometimes and it's in a good mood or a bad mood.
Yeah.
When you first play these things, musicians say you almost immediately feel that you can do something with this. And this is something that you're going to be able to make music with in a very special way.
Yes, that connection is there from the beginning. And the connection is also one that grows over many years. I've now played on this violin for about 5 years, and I still feel like I'm learning the ins and outs of what is really possible.
Is this the violin you've brought out for us to hear in these concerts?
Yes.
Good. Well, we're going to hear you now playing a Brahms G major violin sonata, which we actually have here on our system and we play from time to time. So we get a chance now to hear you play. But you were telling me when we were settling down in the studio a rather intriguing story about this recording and the sonata.
Yes.
Will you share it with us?
Yes. So this recording came about in a rather unusual way. It was during COVID or shortly post-COVID, and I was needing to do an audition tape for Prussia Cove, this music festival that happens in England. And so I messaged the class pianist in Hanover, who's this brilliant pianist, Jihuan Hong, and asked him if he had half an hour to spare to record a movement of a sonata. And we sat down and started recording and then listened back and realized actually this sounds pretty good. Just by chance, the hall and the microphone setup and the sound engineer, sometimes it just really works. And so then we decided to do a couple of takes and do it nicely. And this has been a recording that I look back fondly on, also because it was the first time in quite a while that I'd played music, chamber music, with someone, because during COVID, obviously, mm-hmm. that wasn't possible.
That's a lovely history for a piece like this. Well, now we get to hear Geoffrey Armstrong himself playing his smart violin in part of the first movement of the Brahms G major violin sonata. Part of the Brahms Violin Sonata in G Major, played by my guest today, Geoffrey Armstrong, and which we have, as I said, Geoffrey, on our playout system here on Fine Music Radio. Remind me of the name of the pianist?
That was Ji Huan Hong.
He was the one from Hanover.
Yes, pianist in Hanover. Fantastic pianist, and he was our class pianist when I was studying there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. They must be important to you because they're not mere accompanists, are they? They can influence you in so many ways.
Absolutely not, no. The term collaborative pianist is better used today. Mm. And really, as we'll see in this Piano Trio program that we're about to play now, Henley, our pianist, has much more than just an accompanying job. The two sonatas are incredibly equal between piano and violin and piano and cello. Mm-hmm. And the Piano Trio, of course, he's got plenty of work to do in the Mendelssohn, let's just say.
Yes, of course,
the in the last movement,
right.
Yes.
That's right. Geoffrey, I was wondering about your interest in repertoire. Have you got a fairly wide interest at the moment? I suppose as a young man you need to have. Was there a special genre of music that you enjoy most?
You know, I find myself coming back to Mozart, Haydn, Schubert and Beethoven. But with my quartet, we also play a lot of contemporary music. And I find this also fascinating. Just the idea that pieces that were composed as little as 6 months ago can be just as effective at bringing an audience to their feet.
Yeah.
And I really love getting involved in new music and premiering pieces and things like that. I find that really important.
The problem there, don't you find, is sometimes it's then difficult to get people in because they're scared of modern repertoire. But as you said, very often one is surprised and get up on their feet and clap and scream.
Absolutely. And I think it's also important to program in a way that's, you know, that's inviting.
Mm-hmm.
And to present these works in a way that makes them appealing to audiences that may not be used to them.
Right, right, absolutely. Now, when you've finished with the series of concerts you're doing here, which I'm about to remind our listeners of, what do you do then? You go back to work, so to speak, in Germany.
So yes, I'll be going back to work. I'll be going back to, well, we begin with 2 weeks of quartet rehearsal because we've got a project coming up, and then afterwards I'll be with the orchestra again with the Kammerphilharmonie.
This quartet, the Nerida Quartet, have you made any recordings, commercial recordings yet?
We haven't made any recordings yet, but that's in the works for next year, hopefully. At the moment, we have just won a scholarship from the Deutsche Musikwettbewerb, the Deutsche Stiftung Musikleben, and they are providing us with a rather large number of concerts next year. So we're going to be quite busy in Germany.
Playing in Germany,
yes,
itself. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that's great news. That's great news. And hopefully maybe one day there will be a recording that you can send us here on Fine Music Radio. But otherwise it's back to the orchestra work that you do.
Yes.
Mostly.
Yes.
When you are playing in the orchestra, is there ever an occasion, you have to be honest here, you see, is there ever an occasion you think, oh no, we're not doing that again, or oh no, I really can't stand this composer, or oh no, not that conductor again? Or is it all tremendously stimulating?
No, you know, there are ups and downs. I will be somewhat honest. But but I think what's so nice about the orchestra is that it's really a family, and there's always something to laugh about and always something to smile about. And no matter what the weather, what the conductor, what the repertoire, we'll always find something about what we're doing to enjoy. And recently we played last week in Switzerland, we played the Enigma Variations, which for the orchestra, an orchestra in Germany, is not the normal repertoire. That's something that really needed to be learnt and rehearsed. And I personally love it because I've played this stuff in England when I was studying there. But for my colleagues, it was an absolute horror. They were you know, beside themselves with fear and confusion. And, you know, it was, at the end of the day, it was a really fun concert. It was fantastic. So, yeah, we always find a way.
How nice it must be to have like a family in an orchestra, as you say.
Yeah.
As you said, it's not a huge orchestra, but it's a chamber orchestra, yeah, after all. And to have that sort of family vibe must be really special to make music.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And they also seem to me to be mostly young people from photographs I've seen.
It's really interesting. At the moment, it's quite a mix.
Mm-hmm.
And the orchestra began in the 80s with a group of students, essentially. and they came up from almost nothing to what they are today. Now what's happening is a generational shift, and so gradually more and more young people are being brought in, being hired in. And this generational change is something that is being very actively sort of supported by the orchestra and its management. So it's a very interesting time. It's a very fun time.
And a stimulating time by the sounds of things for you. Okay, now we're going to end shortly with a piece I think no one will expect from you. But we'll come back to that in a moment. I just want to remind people, Jeffrey, about your concert tour. I mentioned at the beginning, I just want to run through quickly, you and your piano trio will be performing from the 22nd to the 30th of August at various venues, so you can't really miss him. It's on Saturday the 22nd, 6 p.m. at the Moyo restaurant in Kirstenbosch, on Sunday the 23rd at 3 p.m. Old Nectar, Tuesday the 25th, 6 p.m. Montague Music Society, and Wednesday the 26th, 7 p.m. Velchemie and Concert Series, and then the last concert, Sunday the 30th of August, a week later, at 4 p.m. at the Goodnow Hall in Wellington. It's quite a variety of venues, actually, so many people will get a chance to hear you. And then you go back, as we said. So now, surprise us with your last piece, Jeffrey.
Right, so this piece is, as you say, a little surprising and not what one might expect. It's Cape Town Flower by Abdullah Ibrahim. And this is a song that I listened to very much when I was in my undergrad in England and felt quite homesick. In high school, in my music class, we had a jazz teacher who took us for subject music, and he instilled in me this passion for South African jazz and South African music. And so I discovered the album that this is on whilst I was in Birmingham on a rainy night. And it's just something that I've always come back to and I enjoy very much.
Okay, Abdullah Ibrahim, ending our session on People of Note with the violinist Jeffrey Armstrong. Jeffrey, great to speak to you, and come and visit us again soon.
Thanks so much for having me.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.